Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Mary Blake Show. Today I have a special guest, Mary Cannons Green. Mary's one woman dynamo, that rare individual who turns dreams into achievements. Her amazing career spans decades and projects in many fields. It began at the Harlem Repertory Theater in New York City, but soon expanded to producing cultural events, worked for the United Nations, the National Association for Television, Arts and Sciences in China, International Women's Organization, and humanitarian efforts in many fields. Whether on stage, chairing committee meetings, organizing seminars, or supporting others, her talents, energy, creativity, and enthusiasm are a driving force. I can't wait to find out what she's up to now. So, with no more ado, here's the lady we call Fifi.
Thank you, Mary. It's a pleasure to be here with you this afternoon, really.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm just looking forward to finding out how in the world did you get started anyway? Was your family behind you? Did you have school or people that supporting you?
Well, actually, Mary, that's a good question. I was always a self-starter and a self-motivator, I must say. But my family, we are the Cannons. We are from North Carolina. I didn't really get a chance to know them as well as I wanted to. My cousin, Dr. J. Alfred Cannon, was the psychiatrist for Richard Pryor, and his sister, Ann Sweat, was one of my greatest early supporters. We just lost her in May. So to answer that question, it's the long-winded way around saying that, yes, I did have the family support, but I was always a go-getter.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think you haven't changed much. So how did you get involved with the Harlem Repertory Theater?
Well, I was living in Harlem at the time, and Ed Ellison, who happened to be a brilliant director, he along with Alex Foster, decided that they wanted me to audition for a play called Dope. And by the time I got a chance to get my hat together, they had already cast it. So they wrote a play for me called The Glorified Brat.
Oh, my goodness.
And I starred in that. And it was wonderful. I worked with the great Esther Rawl from Good Times. She was one of my co-stars in a play called Community Kitchen. It was really my second home, the Harlem Repertory Theater and Workshop. And
how old were you when you started?
11.
Wow. Okay.
I had taken classes at the Ed Sullivan Theater on 52nd Street at 10 and a half. And I just always felt like I was a star. And I wanted people to see me. And they did. And All the way up to the time that I did my one-woman show at the Dance Theater of Harlem, which was many decades later from the great director, Louis Johnson. So I've been very fortunate in surrounding myself with the people who could really move the train, you know?
Yeah,
very
I hear
excited.
You.
Yes.
That's wonderful. And I know that you're constantly supporting other people. I mean, you're one of the most supportive people I've ever known. I mean, you're always just trying to go someplace to see somebody.
Yes. And one of the reasons that I do that, I think, is because we all are part of one human family. And there's so much to be skittish about these days, I would say, that anytime I could find an opening to do something for someone else, you know, my passion is seniors and children.
Uh-huh.
So I was fortunate enough to work in both capacities and do it really very well. So anytime somebody needs me, it's more than a gift. It's a calling that you really need to be there. This life is so brief and so short, and we need more smiles and more love and more humanity, I think. And that's one of the reasons that I will take the A train or anything else I have to get to support anybody's effort.
That's fantastic. So, you know, I know you spent many years working in the with the United Nations. How did you find get involved with them?
I got involved with the UN by really paying attention to a wonderful person who was an ex-nun in Harlem, and her name is Dr. Dolores Blakely. We call her the Queen Mother.
I see.
And she said, Mary, you must come and you must get on this committee. And I was hooked. I went, and I found it so fascinating to meet women from so many different parts of the world who really came with something unique and dynamic to the table. It was a game changer for me. You know, I was in Pakistan, jumping around a little bit, back in 1980, and to see the women there with so little, it was just amazing, and I would complain about breaking a nail. And then I saw the real world. I mean, there was no water. I mean, you know, so it's a kind of thing where it's brought right home to you. Who are you to expect so much and be so ungrateful? So for me, you know, they said it was so funny. Please don't give the women traveler's checks, you know, because they'll go back and get the whole family. But if they need it, why not give it? You know what I mean? This has always been my thought. And so I defied them, and I went back to the village with a friend of mine, two friends actually, and gave them more traveler's checks. And I've been blessed ever since. As soon as I got back to America, the first assignment, which was really not an assignment, the first gift that I received, and I don't know if it was because I was a humanitarian in Pakistan, was I got an opportunity to produce Tony Bennett in Carnegie Hall.
Oh,
doesn't
my
get
heaven.
Any better than that, you know? So that's one of the reasons that I will constantly give and give and give and give.
I know that you count many, many famous show business personality as close friends. Could you tell us about that?
I do. You know, one of the wonderful things that happened for me was I got an opportunity to meet Frank Sinatra. And it's a very funny story. It's sort of long-winded, but I'll capsulize it for you. I didn't think that my clothes were appropriate. He was at the Sheraton Hotel, and it was a fundraiser for the Republicans, if I'm not mistaken. And I was introduced to him by Senator Alphonse D'Amato. But the funny part was that I came in and out and in and out of that train station. We had tokens back in those days. You didn't have to swipe. And I'm saying to myself, why are you so ambiguous about this? This is old blue eyes. It doesn't matter what you look like. You have got to get in. And then insecurity took the best of me, and I came back out into the street. Then I went back into the street. I did this for half an hour.
Then
finally I said to myself, listen, girlie, if you don't go meet Frank Sinatra, how in the world could you ever explain it to your father?
Oh, my
father loved Frank Sinatra more than life. And so I went back in, and I did get on the line, and Alphonse D'Amato did introduce me to him, and everybody was online to meet him. But when I finally got up to him, I was talking a mile a minute, and he said, you're just the cutest thing I've ever seen. And that just made my world. And that's just one. I mean, I worked with Muhammad Ali. But my biggest, I think, thrill for me came when I had an opportunity to be with James Cagney. I think that was a highlight for me.
Really?
Yes. Helen Hayes also, too. But Jimmy, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what did you do with him?
Well, actually, I worked with, Floyd Patterson, the famous boxer. I was his director of corporate development for the Floyd Patterson's Children's Foundation. And he was up in Verne Farms, where Cagney also lived. And that's how we became close. He introduced me to Marge Zimmerman, who was his caretaker. And Marge fell in love with me, and we just bonded. And it was a real thrill for me. To be with Cagney.
I can hear that. My goodness, he was some character, wasn't he?
Cancer was his sign, by the way, so you know they rule humor. And he was absolutely wonderful, but everybody was trying to get to him, you know. And one incident, I remember Warner Wolf, the sportscaster, who knew my son well from basketball, his basketball college days. He was quite a standout. He was an MVP in the Final Four in New Orleans. And Mona Wolf said to me, you know, I've covered your son. And I said, well, then I'll let you in. If you know Paco, I'll let you in. So I let him in to meet James Cagney, and he sat down, and it was wonderful. But actually, I was babysitting him till the end of his life. Yeah. It was wonderful.
Really?
It was wonderful. So I had the biggest actor in the world. And, of course, Helen Hayes, you know, was the Littlest Clown, our ambassador. We did a play called The Littlest Clown at the White House for Jimmy Carter when little Amy was about, I guess, maybe 8 or 9. So I'm jumping around a little bit. But, yeah, famous people, I seem to be a magnet for them, you know. And it's just been a wonderful ride. Muhammad Ali was so good to me. Louis Johnson, the great choreographer now. I mean, it's really been wonderful.
I can imagine.
What a ride.
Usually there's somebody, one special person I know.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, I remember her singing, I'm Still Here.
Okay. Is that Eartha? Eartha Kitt?
No.
Oh.
Yeah. The Sondheim songs, Broadway Baby, all the songs she did.
Mm-hmm.
Considering you were best friends with her, I'm sure. My mind is.
Are you talking about Elaine Stritch?
Yeah.
Oh,
there you
sure.
Go.
Yeah, yeah. Company. Yeah, my baby girl. I miss her every day.
Yeah.
She was just fabulous. You know, when I got with Elaine, it was so funny because I didn't know who she was. I had no clue who she was until I met her fabulous husband, John Bay.
Okay.
From Bay Muffins. And then I started to look her up and see some of the fabulous things that she did. Then she invited me to a party on Fifth Avenue at Sharman Douglas's house. Do you know Sharman Douglas? Sharman Douglas's father was the ambassador to the for Great Britain. And she was going to see Prince Charles and Diana, and so she gave us her mansion on Fifth Avenue. Well, actually, she gave it to Stritch. And we had a fabulous party there.
Wow.
It was absolutely, every star in Hollywood came. It was just absolutely wonderful. Mm. And then from there, if you want me to continue from there, then I got a chance to meet the great Milton Goldman. Milton Goldman was the agent for the stars.
Uh-huh.
Polly Bergen. Yeah, I mean, this from that ilk. God, and he was wonderful. And that's where I met Pat Kennedy Lawsett. Who was his neighbor on Sutton Place.
Uh-huh.
And we Mayor Lindsay came with his wonderful wife, Mary. Aunt Fanny came. You remember Gertrude Berg? Molly Goldberg?
Yes,
she was her secretary.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
She took me to Milton Berle to see a new play called Where's Papa on 12th Street. So I'm just throwing these names out at you because, you know, you're making me recall so many years ago, Mary. I really do. I love this. I'm forced to recall these things, you know. Geraldine Fitzgerald, just great names. But, you know, John Springer, of course, Springer Associates. Yeah, he's Marlo Thomas's godfather. He took me to Marlo's apartment, and we had wonderful times with Shelley Winters. And, you know, it's just the names go on and on and on and on. And one of the highlights, I think, especially for me, was a chance to work with Anna Strasberg, Lee's last wife.
Oh,
she's born the day after I am, by the way, so the 60s.
Yeah.
To be with Al Pacino while he's studying his lines for Scarface, I can't explain the love. I cannot explain the love. And he would have to put this hoodie on to go outside because he couldn't. If they recognize him, they would maul him.
Oh, sure.
So Al used to go get Japanese food for us. We were at the house in Strasburg. And little Drew Barrymore was running around. She's a big star now, but she couldn't have been no more than 3. So we've had some good memories, some fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So from all of your show business, how in the world did you get from show business to China?
Well, I went to China with Mattis, the National Association of Television Arts and Sciences, which was really very nice. And the Pakistan piece was not on our itinerary. So I don't know. You know, it was a snafu and a big one.
Oh, really?
And God bless Ronald Reagan for getting me back to the state. Oh, yeah, really. That's very, very frightening.
Wow.
We were going to Egypt. We did go to Cairo. Mm-hmm. I did float down the Nile for a while. We went to the operas, and it was a fabulous trip until we hit that snag. But China was brilliant. Really, the Chinese people are just so warm, so kind, so courteous. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was really an amazing trip. Mm-hmm.
What
I learned
did you
how to
accomplish over there. It was amazing.
Well, I got a chance to go to the factory, talk with the women. You know, I'm a pro woman, so we went to all of the factories and we saw the countryside. We went up and bought jewelry from Harbin Jade, which was really wonderful.
Boy.
I learned how to, it was a pleasure trip. You know, riding those trains in China, I cannot tell you the speed was amazing, and every village we went to hosted us with the most wonderful feasts that one could imagine. Really. They're talking about Peking duck. I'm telling you. Everywhere we went, it was wonderful. And I had a fabulous interpreter by the name of Sonny. I'll never forget Sonny. He tried to teach me how to play chess. The train rides are just, I'd rather an MGM movie, really.
Yeah. Goodness.
Mm-hmm.
How wonderful. But what happened to you in Pakistan?
Just being detained against your will is frightening enough, you know. And then you really don't know what's going on. And I felt that I could get a little cocky after I got back to the States. But while I was there, you don't know what these guys are going to do. I mean, you know, we don't know whether they're terrorists or not. They put us on a bus and parked us on a hill where the bus could have just...
Really?
Yeah. But I must tell you, those were, I was really heavily into my brandy days. So my Remy Martin solved everything for me as far as I was concerned. I used to calm everybody down. Oh, darling, what are they going to do with us? They're not going to harm us, you know. Pour another drink, baby. Give me another drink.
What year was
that? That's how I got through.
What year was this?
1980.
Wow. And what was going on that Pakistan wouldn't let you out?
They did eventually let us out. I mean, we only detained for maybe about 3 days, but just to be detained at all and not being aware of the powers that be and what their wishes were and how they were going to execute it. So, and I was really dancing good in those days, you know, so I tried to, like Bob Hope, entertain the troops. You know, I'm like, what's on these guys' mind? What are they going to do with us? So, and being one of the younger members, I think I was the youngest member on that trip, or one of the youngest members. Uh-huh. It was my job to calm the elderly down, you know, the people that were a little older, because they were really frightened. And I just was too silly to be frightened, I guess, you know.
Okay.
And then after that, I'm so sorry. I must tell you that this trip was booked by Arthur Frommer. And he is known for his fabulous trips to Italy and to Jerusalem. And so I had nothing but the utmost confidence that he would get us back to the States.
Oh, sure.
And so when we talked to Arthur directly, he said, eat whatever you want and charge it to the agency. Well, that made it up for me anyway, because it was steak every night for me. it was really wonderful. I've been blessed.
That's too funny.
Isn't it funny? Yeah.
But they didn't have steak in the bus. How did you get in the bus?
Well, we thought we were going sightseeing.
Really?
Yes, and not only that, the soldiers came out and said, you need to stay in your hotels because it is a volatile part of the world. You need to stay in your hotel. But, of course, Mary couldn't listen, so I went out. I went out. I looked through the caves. I went out. It was wonderful. And I had the soldiers protecting me.
Yay.
And they took me to prison camp. I said, I want to see everything. I'm not coming back to Pakistan. So they said, well, we'll take you to Rawalpindi. So we went to Rawalpindi, which was wonderful. I said, now after seeing Rawalpindi, I'd like to go to, I think it was Karachi.
What was Rawalpindi?
The capital.
What was that?
Huh? The capital.
The capital. Oh, okay.
The capital.
Wow.
That's the hub. That's where the happenings are.
Yeah.
You know? And, it was just so thrilling. Now that I think back to those days, it really was wonderful. Kind of, I wouldn't do it today. With the condition of the world. No, I wouldn't do it today. And I think that
things
captured...
changed a little bit in Pakistan.
I was told, and this might have, I mean, I don't know how true it is, that the cave that they found Osama bin Laden in was the same cave that I was in. See, all of this stuff is wonderful after you're back home.
yeah, it's
that's
nice.
Where they captured it.
Nice. Sitting in a friendly place in New York City with friends is totally different than thinking about traipsing around in Pakistan.
Yes, absolutely. You're
oh
so
goodness.
Right, my love. Yeah.
Okay.
But the spine-tingling experiences I've had is really just amazing.
Just amazing.
Yeah.
So no wonder you have so much to give
to the
people that you work with.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Who introduced you to the United Nations?
Queen Mother.
Yeah.
Dr.
Okay.
DeLuise, yes.
Okay.
And she's the founder of the Harlem's Women International. And she was the one who had the foresight to put me on certain committees where she thought I would do the most good. And I'm still indebted to her.
What committees did you work on?
Okay. Well, I worked on several. But one that I spent a lot of time with was the Indigenous Peoples Committee, learning all about the different tribes, the treaties, the betrayals, the death. They're very, very serious. I mean, they're on reservations, drinking themselves and smoking themselves to death. It's amazing. But it's knowledge. It's what you must know. You cannot act like it doesn't exist, because it does. And you teach yourself, and you'll cheapen your existence. You really have to find these things out. So, they invited me out. Reverend Smith invited me to come to the reservation, which is on our way to the Hamptons, I think it is. Anyway, I went out, and it was just absolutely amazing, and I got to meet all of the chiefs, and they gave me some beautiful clothing, beautiful Indian clothing, and that all stemmed out of that United Nations experience, that committee experience, yes, really wonderful. Of course, all the women's committees that I could possibly get on, I joined them. The seniors, I joined them.
I see.
So it was, it was a well-rounded experience for me with the United Nations.
It sounds like it. And then once you got to the point, when did you decide that you would take your talents and go into the other areas?
Well, you know, Mary, you don't really ever leave. It's a continuum. You drop it, but you always pick it up eventually later on. You do. But I'm the type of person that I have to do some good. I don't want to be in your life without doing some good. You know, I had a motto when I was 4 years old: you bring me joy or you bring me nothing. And I've lived my life that way. And that's what I try to do.
Right.
I try to bring in joy. I mean, I want to be embraced, not tolerated. You know, and there's a distinct difference. So it comes natural for me. I mean, I wake up in the morning trying to figure out who needs help and how can I do it. What do they need? Where should I go? And I'm always guided, you know. And spiritually, it works. I tell you, my greatest joy was Vandalia Senior Center.
Yeah.
Really? I went for 9 days and stayed for 9 years.
You're kidding.
That's how much fun I had.
Now, where is that senior center?
Vandalia Senior Center is 47 Vandalia Avenue in Canarsie, Brooklyn.
Okay.
And I must tell you that it was live theater every day. Those seniors, because they don't give a damn. You know, you can't tell them what to do. You can't push them around. They already paid their dues. And I just loved it. And it was at the height of the O.J. Simpson trial, I believe. And they were divided by racial lines.
Goodness.
Oh, yes. Oh, it was too much fun. And so, you know, it was the type of thing, and I've written about this extensively, where people don't really understand how close we are and what we have in common, because we come from different cultures. But
absolutely,
if we could drop the armor just for a little while, and I must tell you, when I got to Vandalia Senior Center, they had enemy camps.
Oh, really?
When I left, the North wasn't talking to the South. The East wasn't talking to the West. The Protestants weren't talking to the Catholic. Oh, yeah, the West Indians weren't talking to And I said, what do we have here? Oh, this is going to be longer than 9 days, darling, but never in my wildest dreams did I think I would stay 9 years.
My goodness.
I loved it so much. I could not. That was not work for me.
Well, now, what exactly was your quote work, your unwork, shall we say?
Was my...
What your unwork, what did you do there?
At the Vandalia? I was a chef.
Yeah.
I was a chef.
You were the chef?
Uh-huh. And that's how I could bring all the races together, all religions together, because I said, if you guys don't get along, then there's no chicken at the end of the day. And that means, oh, no chicken at the end of the day. And that was symbolic, because I had so much surplus food after, and seniors, they don't have to cook, they don't have to go out, they don't have to go shopping. A lot of them haven't heard from their children in 25 years. So it was a very, very interesting challenge for me. And I said, this is how we're going to work it. There's only one boss here, and her name is Mary. Now, if you behave, we'll all have some turkey at the end of the day. And so I would tell them, bring down your little baskets and everything. You would be surprised how everybody changed instantly. There's no such thing as a permanent enemy anyway. So it worked. It worked. In a nutshell, it worked.
Well, you know, I guess the stomach opens up a lot of different territory.
You
have to get along our stars.
That's so well put, honey. That is so well put, because that's exactly how I read it. And it just worked beautifully. And, you know, one particular instance where a friend of mine, I'll never forget her, could not stand another woman for whatever reason. I don't know. It perhaps might have been something that happened before I arrived, but I just didn't. You don't want to force a relationship necessarily, but you want to let it grow naturally. And
there you go.
Once this woman didn't come back to the center for a couple of days, everybody started to say, maybe we should go up and knock on the door. Maybe we should. I said, but not you. You don't even speak to her. And now they're very best friends. And it might have had something to do with the chicken, but they saw each other's humanity. They saw each other's humanity. And so and it was a lot of that stuff going on at Vandalia Senior Center. And I miss them. I miss my people. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what made you decide to move on from there?
It wasn't enough money.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But I did teach civil law after I left the kitchen. Yes, one of my good buddies, and they all were, fell off a bus, and she didn't sue, and I was outraged.
Oh my!
And then I started making games and having quizzes, and if this happened to you, what would you do? And if this happened to you, what would you do? And they didn't have a clue. I said, okay, well, every Monday from now on, in the lunchroom, I'm teaching civil law, because I'm a paralegal.
And also, how did you learn about civil law?
I'm a paralegal.
I missed that along the way. How could I do that?
Very easily, Mary. How many things can you do?
I guess I wasn't paying attention.
Now, don't let that happen again.
Okay.
Yes, so I knew a little bit about the law. And I loved it. I think it was too deep, really. I started with water and the importance of water.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a yawn fest. They just didn't want to sit for it. Who cares about water? We turn on the spigot and the water comes out. And I'm saying, oh, God is so much deeper than that. And maybe I ought to shift a little bit. So I shifted from the water, because lack of water leads to war and famine. They didn't want that. They didn't want that. So I said, well, let's talk about protecting ourselves. You know, especially the women, you know, it wasn't necessarily a high crime area, but I wanted them to know who the local police captain was, where the precinct is, because a lot of them were shut-ins and a lot of them were by themselves. And they said, Mary, you're an angel. You're just a godsend. I said, well, you know, we all are if you allow us to be. You know.
Amazing.
So that's my Vandalia piece.
Well, that is absolutely fascinating. So now, was that before or after the UN? Because we're kind of skipping around here.
Yeah, UN is now. UN still is now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I only do special events.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't. It's not mandatory that I be at the UN. You know,
see.
They don't pay me. In other words,
I see.
I'm not on payroll.
I hear you.
So intermittently, yes, if there's something, an issue that I think is a hot button issue, then I'll scurry over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Okay.
I wanted to mention something about, you remember John Cassimatidis running for mayor?
Oh, my goodness. When was that?
The last elections. Maybe
Okay.
He owns all the Gristiti stores around here.
Oh, John Cassimatidis.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I started working with him, and he introduced me to Arianna Huffington Post, at a wonderful dinner that we had. I think it was for, PAL.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jamie Landau runs that. And that was very, very interesting, being that close to a campaign. I really had, my father was a sort of a politician. He ran in Brooklyn. But John, to be close to John at that level, where he would invite me to his birthday party, starring Tony Orlando and Dawn, it's just like, wow. So it's always something that's going to be happening with me. You know,
I hear you.
Really. And it's just wonderful to be able to associate and affiliate with those people who are really, really game changers and shot callers. You know what I mean? To know them all, the whole gamut, you know, it's really very exciting.
Well, somehow or other, it seems like you're always promoting someone.
Yes, I am, Mary, I am. But, you know, it has to be worthy of my time. You know, because that's the one thing you're not going to get back. So you have to, you know, think long and hard about these causes, you know, that you are going to join, because you're always being offered something. I met a young man the other day who wants me to manage his career. I'm going to see him sing next Monday night. I don't think he's my type of client necessarily, but I want to give him a shot because maybe I can turn him over to you or somebody else that can help his career. Because it's rough out here without a link. It's rough out here without a connection. It really is. You need people to look out for you.
Yeah, it sure is. Yeah. So I know you've always been interested in music. And what are you really, really working on now? What's your current kind
of? I wish I knew. I really wish I knew. I'm committed, however, to the Christian ministry, which was founded by my daughter, Sharoya Cephas, and down in Glen Allen, Virginia, right outside of Richmond. I think it's really very important that we, especially in today's economy, where these young men, you know, they really are hopeless to a degree. We're working on the youth now, Mayor. It's real important that we get to them, you know, before they destruct. Life can be so beautiful.
Yeah.
But you got to have a dollar in your pocket, baby. You got to have a job. You know what I mean? Yeah, you got to be able to eat. That's my pet right now, is going back and forth. I just had a wonderful meeting in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago with the great Maxine Waters, representative from California. She was lovely. And Representative John Conyers, who's also lovely. And the next day, the governor of Virginia restored voting rights for 216,000 convicted felons. So I just got finished with that the other day. So I don't know. Tomorrow is something else. I'll pack a bag and, you know, do what it is that I need to do. But it has to be strong, has to be meaningful, and it has to merit my time, really. You know, that's important.
I hear you.
People want me to run for office now, but that's not my thing.
Not your thing?
No. You see, it's not the candidate that's corrupt. It's the chair that he must sit in.
Uh-huh.
So, no. No, I'm too truthful. Yeah. I can't play the game.
But I do understand that when you are when you're in politics, there's a whole system that's all set up, and it's running itself, and you're trying to say, wait a minute, we're going to go left. No, this is going to be right here. How can you do that when a person of honor and respect and determination can't really get anything done? What happens?
And that's a very, very keen observation. And I must tell you, from what I know, me and my, we worked with in Brooklyn in the early days for Shirley Chisholm. My father was her right hand. And that was also a wonderful experience. But what it does is it sets the table for you so that you don't trip.
Yeah.
You know, you're going in with these lofty expectations about how you're going to change at least a small area, small community, and they're telling you that's not the deal here. So you're so right about that system, because not only you say go left, the car doesn't even go left.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter. The car only goes right. So you can, I mean, you have to figure that out. And it's also to, God, we just need so much help in so many different areas. So I guess my biggest contribution could be to train the youth to sort of do what it is that I do. But you got to really have a heart. Mm-hmm. You can't play with this stuff. You can't play with people's lives. You can't.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, minimum wage is the same thing as it is for a cup of coffee at Starbucks, you know, and this disparity, this you know, have and have not, this side by side back can only explode, baby, because it's only one pie, you know, and to see 1% control this vast, all of this wealth, it's just, and so many people, I passed here today and 4 men already asked me for money. Right on this trip.
Oh,
that's
the
reality of it. And I must tell you, the other day I gave one, but the stench that came from, this man hadn't had a bath in 9 years.
How
could you from there go to, you know, Joe Allen's and have dinner? How is that done?
Yeah.
But there, by the grace of God, go out.
I agree, but there's such, don't you think that there seems to be a widening gap between the rich and the poor, and the people in the middle are kind of scattered, and you don't know where the heck they are anymore.
And it all by design, darling. That's the frightening part.
Really?
Of course.
Who's designed?
Who's calling the shots? Who's running the show? Whoever running the show, yes, indeed. And it's done in layers.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was on a train in China, and it was frightening because it's the population. Now I'm just as frightened here in my own country to get on the train, because they're pushing them in. We got problems, very serious problems that we don't, television won't solve. They know more about Kelly Ripa, you know, than they just break up with Michael. I haven't had a television in my home in 4 years, by the way. So people don't, I just won't. I think, there's other things that I need to be doing with my time, but I'm just saying that I don't want to deny you what you've worked for, but you must understand that it's not a fair system, and it'll never be a fair system.
Now, since you have been in brushing with the show business and involved with it and part of it and everything since you were 11 years old, how has it changed over the years?
How's what changed, darling?
Show business.
No, I don't think it's changed at all. It's still who you know and what you're going to do for it. You know, period.
Mm-hmm.
That's a one-sentence answer. You know, I was never one to I was one of the co-founders of the Miss Black America Beauty pageant in the 70s.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I was also choreographing for the stylistics who spent time in my home. My sister, my god sister, my love, was the captain of the James Brown dancers. So I was always around. But it was, and that's before he became the godfather of soul. You know, so I've always been in the thick of it. And always been a great dancer. I've always been a wonderful dancer. Just the rhythm.
Yeah.
But how it's changed, I don't think it's changed at all. No, I've been propositioned time and time again. If you want, you know, you don't have to type, baby, you know.
Yeah.
But if you want to get from point A to point B in terms of your career, then you got to be my woman. And I could never.
That's why I got out of show business. Tell me. The expression was, for every canary that won't, there were 50 who will.
Yes. Fine. As long as I'm not one of the 50. I don't mind. And people said to me, you know, I used to date Joe Frazier. And they would say to me, you're not pregnant. I said, no, we're not. That's not how it works with my body. You know,
yeah.
We have, no. So, and that's, again, you know, part of the director, what a casting couch or whatever it is that they call it, sweetheart.
Yeah.
You can't,
yeah.
Just tell you something, I don't mind. And I've seen some things that outrage me that women will do, and men too. They're not off the hook. But I won't.
That's amazing. You're just an absolutely incredible person.
Thank you. Love you. You know that. That's why I'm here. We laugh all the time. I love it.
I'm telling you, I don't even know where to go next.
Just jumping around. Not the easiest interview, I know, because, you know, it's spotty. And things have to come to me. You know, like what Helen Hayes said to me, you must never be away from the theater. And I'm saying, if Miss Hayes was here today, you know what I tell her? Who could afford it? After what the producers did, I mean, $175 a ticket to... How do you engage? How do you...
I don't know. It's
all about the money.
It just... You know, and people can't afford to go there anymore.
No. We're lucky we were able to get a baseball game in, you know, with the family. I'm family-oriented, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm a strong proponent of that unit because I came from great, great parents. We're always smiling and always dancing. God knows what we had, but we were very wealthy in our heads, you know.
Yeah.
That's my
most important thing is the wealth that you have in your spirit, in your heart, and your head. You just... It can't be taken away from you.
No, inseparable.
And it seems like you're just constantly learning and constantly reaching out and constantly exploring.
Yeah.
What would you say are you most proud of in your life?
My children.
Yeah?
My children. My son and my daughter bring me such joy, I cannot tell you. They are so good. And one of the reasons I believe that they are is because they had good parents, too, you know.
Sure.
And they had their grandparents, too. So we're intergenerational. We all lived in one home, in one house. And breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you had to run into grandma, you know. And, you know, that kind of continuity.
Uh-huh.
They wouldn't. My children wouldn't stray because they were afraid of their mothers, not their father.
I see.
And I'm so disappointed. But that's not my conversation, really. They are both very, very wonderful people, well accomplished, well adjusted. And I wish I had 12 more like them.
Okay.
Paco and Choo Choo, yes.
Yeah, really? No, I know you tell me that your daughter is has just founded this. What do you call it now?
I want to call it, Mary, the Cephas Christian Ministry for Youth.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So we're trying to raise money. We're really looking for some seed money, some good money, though. Michael Jordan. We want to get Michael Jordan and Isaiah Thomas on board with this because they are stars in their own right, and they have wonderful charities that they involve. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I was just with him a couple of weeks ago down at Bryant Park. Signed his new book to me. I'm going to reach out to people of that ilk who understand the mission and want to save some of these wayward children. It's real, because all children are our children, whether we realize it or not. They're all our
children. Absolutely.
At-risk kids, throwaway kids. No. that's just too ungodly like for me. So I have faith that this organization is going to do very well. I'm going to give it all of my effort and energy and try to call in as many people as I know, call in some favors, you know, that I've been hovering over the years. And we'll see what happens with it. But thank you for mentioning that, sweetness. That's real important. That's going to be a project that's very close to my heart.
Yes.
And I'll be doing a lot of traveling between New York and Glen Allen, Virginia.
Uh-huh.
Right, yes. Yes,
that's
ma'am.
Wonderful.
Yes, and I will keep you posted.
You do that.
I will.
Yes, that's important. So what are the goals of that organization?
Well, it's several. First of all, for them to realize that they matter. Okay. And that failure is not an option, and that they have people in their corner who really do care. You know, my son works in a high school in Brooklyn, mostly Dominican, and the stories that we share, we have date night once a month, and the stories are heartwarming for me because I remember when he was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And then he got it. He came into his own, and they started to wine and dine me. He got over, I don't know how many scholarships he got. From everything from Palo Alto to Providence, which is where he chose. But the route, you know, was so beautiful. Montessori Academy, who trained my children academically. You know, we want to do similar things down in Glen Allen. These children deserve a shot. You don't know who you're going to be born into, what family you're going to be born into, and that really has a lot to do in determining your lot in life, I believe. So that's our goal and our mission, to first of all let them know that they matter and that people care.
I love the Montessori method. It's so different than sitting there and memorizing things, where you get children totally involved in it.
That's why we went there.
And you say your son is teaching in a high school now?
Yes, W.E.B. Du Bois.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how did he start out?
He had a brilliant basketball
scholarship.
Oh, forever. At least 30.
Doing what?
Basketball, playing basketball and being a standout. He was a McDonald's All-Star at 8.
Oh, my goodness. Really?
Yeah. And he was not only in the Final Four, he was the MVP for his school.
Wow.
So they would, and you would never know it with him. He's so unassuming and so laid back and so non-egotistical. But people recognize him from television. You know, that's powerful, that TV, especially when you go that far in college. You know, but my husband is also in the Hall of Fame for Erasmus Hall, so the apple don't fall too far, as they say.
But what was he on television for? In the basketball games?
Keep winning. Just keep winning.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Starts out with 64, 32, 16, and gets down to the Final Four, the best four colleges in America.
Wow.
So the whole family packed up everything and went down to New Orleans, and. We had, I don't know, 25,000 paparazzi or something like that. That's the biggest. You can't get any bigger in college basketball than the Final Four.
Oh,
you cannot get any bigger. There's no the next place is the pros. So,
wow.
It was a very exciting time for us.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had just had a stroke, and he thought that we were going to leave him behind. He
oh.
said, I don't want to go and embarrass Paco. I said, you get dressed, honey. Don't worry. I got your boarding pass already. Don't worry. So it was wonderful. Experience for our family via my son. My daughter's a graduate also, too, of the University of Virginia Commonwealth, VCU.
Uh-huh. That's absolutely fascinating.
Thank you.
So is he involved in organizations, too, or just in teaching in Paco?
Paco does two things.
Yeah.
He's got his own camp. Okay, which is called the Flatbush Youth Association, which was started by his dad.
Okay.
He's taken over the helm of that. So he's got thousands of kids that he's brought across that know him very, very well. I mean, you know, there were no jobs, no teaching jobs in New York for a long time. A lot of ones were getting laid off and recertifying. They picked up the phone and said, Paco, he said, don't he got a job?
Okay. But what do you mean by brought across?
Saved their lives.
Okay.
You know, recreationally, you know.
Brought them from like potential gang members to real.
Well, you don't know where they're going to go. If they're not in something that's positive and organized and well run, they can wind up anywhere. So that's what I mean when I say brought them across, because everybody want to play for Scream. They want to play for Senior Scream, which is my husband, who's in the Hall of Fame now. And my son is also in the Hall of Fame at the Xaverian High School.
Okay.
He broke Chris Mullin's record, who's now the coach at St. John's University. So, yeah, we've been knowing Glory for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So really, how do you think that all of this happened to you? What was it about you that just sort of you're a magnet to? Greatness and joy and service and all of these things. What is it that you bring to life that brings this so much life to you?
Well, I think it's my consciousness, my ability to not look the other way. My kids used to call me with any sort of problem, and I would always say, call me and I'll think of something, but we got to hang up the phone. And it would come to me, and I would call. And still happening today, not so much with my son as my daughter, okay, but any roadblock. I said, well, just wait, let's calm down and think about it. So the common thread that runs through all, and also I was engaged to a guy who's also in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
And people ask me all the time, what is it? It's a calling.
Mm-hmm.
You see, because it's also, I think, that you really have to believe in yourself to know that life is truly a blessing, truly a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will place less emphasis on money, fame, power, and all of these superficial sort of items that will dissipate. We can't stay here, so while we're here, let's focus on doing something that's positive and something that's good, because let's face it, we all have the same energy. You know, we could use it for evil if we so chose.
Yeah.
Sure. So there has to be the spirituality, you know, in you that will say, because your character is what you are when nobody else is looking. Your reputation is something different, you know.
Yes.
But if you're doing the right thing, and he knows. And I guide my life that way. You know Emmy's tough. You know she's tough.
Yes, sure.
She is a handful. And every day she becomes more needy. But you have to understand that, because you're going in the same direction. So you have to have that kind of patience.
Now, by Emmy, you're talking about a world-famous pianist and composer and
arranger,
performer.
Actress.
And outrageous character. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who adores you, by the way. And as a matter of fact, when we first met, you know, I said, is Emmy going to play for you? And I can't recall. It wasn't definitive. You said something to the effect that, well, I hope she does. Maybe. And I said, oh, that's done. Because I can do that. You know, let's do that, Mary, because you got a lovely voice. She's got it. It's a natural. Yeah. I remember a very early encounter with you when I heard your voice. Yeah,
okay.
Really, really beautiful.
Well, it's amazing that we have talents and we have potential. And we all have the same number of minutes in every single day. And some people just run with it, and they run circles around other people who are sitting there and say, well, what can I do? What can I do? I'm just one person, and I don't know what to do. And I've never heard you in 1 minute. I've never heard you say that.
No. And you never will.
I don't think it's in your vocabulary.
No, it's not. I can't relate to that. It's not on my radar, man. No, because, you know, life is to be lived backwards, you know. You don't really, you have to release so that new energies can come in. You, as a brilliant author, know this better than most, you know.
Absolutely.
I remember when I was reading your book, how fascinated I was when you talked about turning a cup upside down. I mean, you can't. You have to be able to receive, baby. How can you? Exactly. And so I sort of, you know, patted myself after that behavior. I believe that there's so much good that we all can do, even if it's advice. You know, I lost a dear friend of mine. I see her in the street all the time, and I love it. And I just, Mamie, is that you? That's for me. That's for me. And she was slightly retarded, at Vandalia. She didn't want me to touch grease. I wash all the pots. Little Italian girl, Mamie Alenzi. To this day, she lives here. There's got to be a place here in my heart
right
for
in
me.
Your heart. Mm-hmm.
So, and I do that with people that I care for.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
I would never hurt you in any way, shape, or form. I'd rather hurt myself because I know better. You know, so I have the facility to keep on going. And as you say, you don't get any more minutes than anyone else. So what do you do with your time?
That's right.
How valuable is it? You have to call those shots. You know, we live in the greatest country in the world, you know, where we have the freedom to make those choices. You know, I'm grateful for, you know, my grandson was born 1 pound, 13 ounces. I think I might have mentioned that to you.
Yeah.
What a gift. Going to be 13 in June.
How old?
13.
Wow.
And he could fit in my hand at birth.
My goodness. Yeah.
So that's the goodness of my Lord. And that keeps me. Nobody can touch that.
No.
To hear his voice, I go nuts. So it's a lot of good stuff. You know, man, a lot of good energy.
It sure is. Well, this is a fantastic thing. We've got just about 3 minutes left. If you could just open up and talk to the people that in the audience, what would you tell them if you could tell them anything?
Well, you know, I'm usually a question and answer type person. I mean, if you ask me a question, I can be a little bit more direct. But basically, that the one tenet that never really changes is that you must have self-respect for you and everybody who comes in contact with you. You must treat people the way you want to be treated. You must. Otherwise, you're just missing out on so much. So I'm not a life coach necessarily, but I laugh long and hard every day. And to me, that's a gift. So if you open up your heart, you will be surprised at how fulfilling life can truly be. So, you know, don't be so hard on yourself all the time. No, I would tell them, you know, you make a mistake, don't worry about it. Pick yourself up, brush yourself off, start all over again. But have faith in humanity and who you are, and do good, and good will come to you. That's what I would say, darling.
Yes.
Do good, and good will come to you. It will follow you like a magnet. It will follow you. But do it with a cheery heart. Don't do it to get something. That's what I would say.
Oh, there you go. Not counting your pennies. Saying, and so many people, it's like life is not a ping pong game.
Right.
It's not. I do for you. Now you got to do for me. I got to do for you. It's like I once told Hazel Scott. She asked me, What's this law of cause and effect? And I told her, it's not a ping pong game. It is what you send out comes back to you, increased and multiplied. It's more like a boomerang. You send a boomerang out. You throw it out. And you don't know where it's going. But out there somewhere, it turns around and it comes right back to you. But you've got to be observant and waiting and anticipating and recognizing when it comes back to you. Because most people, they have these wonderful things happen to them and they don't even notice. It sailed right by. You don't. You do that with a boomerang. Sometimes it'll hit you in the back of the head.
That's right. That's right.
So what you do, what you send out, will come back to you increased and multiplied. But you've got to notice it, and you've got to do something with it. And Mary Cannons,
thank you.
You are phenomenal. You absolutely phenomenal, and it's been a joy talking with you.
And a joy for me.
Any old time.
I will, Dolphy. And a joy for me.
This is Mary Cannons Screen. And how can we get in touch with you?
ScreenAries@AOL.com.
ScreenAries@AOL.com.
That's the best way.
All right.
Yes.
And that's your email. And,
yes.
Screen Aries.
Aries, my sign, right.
At
AOL.
AOL.com.
Yes. Yes.
And God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you as well.
And everyone who's listening, I hope they get inspired and fed and nourished by your wonderful spirit.
Well, this has been wonderful for me as well. It's really been an honor and a pleasure to have this interview with you today. God bless you, Mary. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah. Bye-bye. That's a good...